So my name is Reverend Lynn Schutt. My pronouns are she and they. I'm calling or zooming in from Greatan Rancheria land, currently known also as Petaluma. Did we get people saying where they're from? Actually, I'm going to do a little fellowship, and actually, let's just keep it silent this time because we're going to do a little interaction later. So invite everyone. Oh, so I got this from Lev a while back at EBMC, and I think I named it. I can't remember if they called it that or I named it Chat Bloom. So given that things are, for me at least, I don't know about the rest of you, challenging lately. The invitation is to write in. Okay, but let me listen to the whole instruction first. I'm a recovering perfectionist and social worker, not the recovering part on social worker, but so I like to give instructions. That was a joke, but that's okay. Please write in three things. I'm going to do it too, that how you're feeling, and do not hit return or send yet, because then when I say go, then it blooms, right? The chat blooms. That's why it's called chat bloom. Does that make sense? So right here, go ahead and write, and half the time I forget to and press return, but we're practicing mindfulness of attention. So write three things that you're feeling. Okay. Are people in the chat? If that part wasn't said. Okay, are we all ready? Go like this if you're ready. Okay, ready? Push that little send, and here we go. Bloom, yay! Bloom, bloom, bloom. All right, I'm gonna read a few. Just random. Okay. Nervous, hopeful, tired, grateful, anxious, concerned, heated, nervous, grateful, sad, tired, sad, grateful. Health is good, disconnected from community, peaceful, sad, tired, somber, excited, discouraged, unsupported, confused, pain, rest, hope, sadness, questioning. Thank you for your sharing of how you are. Yeah, it's a difficult time in the world right now, in the Middle East in particular. And I personally just heard of a death today, actually two now, and and also just some people transitioning. So there's a lot going on, and personally also, and perhaps that's happening in your world too. So let us start by a 30-minute meditation. So in my tradition, I'm going to be ringing the bell three times to start and once to end. All right, here we go. And the sound, here we go. Oh, is anyone completely new to meditation? Okay, all right, here we go. All right, just take a few moments to find your anchor. For many, it's either one or two or a few posture points, perhaps more in the Zen tradition. For others, perhaps it's your breath, perhaps the inhale and the exhale. For some, and if it's especially difficult because of trauma response or disassociation, and perhaps a sense of sound. Perhaps the hum of your computer, perhaps noticing the beginning, the middle, and the end if a car is passing by. It could be touch. Perhaps just rubbing your finger across your, I'm doing it right now, across my right knee, or perhaps a little bit of pressure, or the toes gripping. Whatever it is to help you feel anchored to the present, to yourself. The first foundation of mindfulness is awareness of the body in the body. How can we come into this body? Because the body is always present, always. So when we're paying attention to some aspect of our body, we are present. Hence, the more we can focus on that and sustain that awareness, the more our experience of being present strengthens, expands, becomes more affirming. I'll be quiet while you do that, and then I'll be leading a bit of a guided meditation. All right, today I'm going to be leading a metta, or goodwill meditation, and karuna, or compassion meditation. Metta and karuna are two of the four Brahmaviharas, the four divine abodes taught by the Buddha as easeful cultivating or accessing practices so that we can connect to a sense of support and ease, especially during difficult times. We do be doing a progression of starting with I, or ourselves, and then going to you, which you can use as an individual person or a group of people, and then to all beings. This version is based on the one from my book, Home Is Here, Practicing Anti-Racism with the Engage Eightfold Path, on page 85. So the progression of the Brahmaviharas is a way for us to practice expanding the sense of wholeness. This is a set of practices that ask you to know wholeness for yourself and then to send it out to others in increments that open you up to a larger and larger sense of wholeness. When the Brahma Viharas are used as a cultivation practice, strengthening your confidence in their qualities and your sincerity as you offer them to other categories is key. Thus, it's important to make sure you're fully at ease so you can move your body, change your visualization at any time. Additionally, you can tweak the phrases to reflect your sincere intention. So I like to say that in the Brahma Viharas, it isn't so much about rational truth. It is really very much to strengthen, let's say, our muscle of metta or goodwill, or unconditional friendliness, and our muscle karuna, or the wish or the offering of the alleviation of suffering. As such, we'll begin by visualizing ourselves, yourself in any way that can receive. Sometimes this is hard for us as ourself right now, especially in difficulties. So it could be your sense of yourself in the past, perhaps as a future. I like to say even as a tree or a dolphin. Any way that you visualize yourself to be able to receive. I say the phrase, you repeat it to yourself silently. And here, if I say, for instance, may you be happy all the days of your life, and all the days of your life seems not sincere or possible right now, then you can tweak it. I'll offer a few different versions. You can tag those on or come up with your own. So again, this is about strengthening for ourselves, knowing the possibilities. And then when we offer to others, our sincerity as we offer. Not a push through, not a must, not a fix it. All right, visualizing ourselves as we are in any way that can receive. May I be filled with goodwill to myself here and now. Let me connect with a sense of wellness whenever I need it. May peace and ease be accessible to me here and now. May I be happy. On your next inhale, connect with how you know that one or all of these qualities of kindness, or goodwill, of wellness, of peace and ease, of happiness, feels true and possible for you. And on the exhale, let yourself feel it as it permeates, perhaps from head to toe, or through your little pinky on your left hand, or up from the ground through your toes, or your knees if you're sitting cross-legged, or through the firmness of your back if you're lying down, or your feet if you're standing or walking. Just let yourself feel it, not necessarily as an emotion or thought, just in any way. So its results. And now visualize another being that you would like to offer these qualities to, not to fix them, but really just as an offering for them to do it as they wish with it. Is there a single being or a group of beings? I say you, if it's a specific person and you have their name, or the name of a specific group, then you say that and you repeat it. May you be able to access a sense of kindness whenever you need it. May you be able to connect with a sense of wellness. May peace and ease be accessible to you here and now. And may you be able to find happiness, if only with the next inhale and exhale. And for yourself, in the next inhale, you connect with how you know that these are true and possible. And on the exhale, you're going to send it to your person or people, freely given for them to do with as they wish. All right, with a few deep breaths, you feel it however you feel it. Right now I'm feeling it as a bit of tenseness in my shoulders, so I'm just going to let myself stretch. This is not about holding still or pushing through. This is really about letting it flow freely, accessing it freely. And now we offer it to all beings, technically without exception. So this could be difficult. So for some, radiating it out, perhaps as a warmth, perhaps as a breeze or a gentle rain, perhaps as an ocean that's vast and wide, or sometimes in increments. In this room, in this building, in this neighborhood, in this community, in this nation, in this earth, and in the galaxy. Whatever way it works for you, ideas with just offering it freely, far and wide. May all beings, without exception, now, unconditional friendliness is true and possible between themselves and ourselves. May all beings be able to connect to a sense of wellness whenever they need it. Let all of us, including this one, access peace and ease here and now. And may all beings near and far know true happiness all the days of their lives, our lives. On the next inhale, you're going to connect with how you know that this is true and possible, any or all of these qualities. And on the exhale, you're going to feel it permeating yourself and then extending out. Again, perhaps as a warmth, perhaps simply as a wish going out with the breeze, or just radiating far and wide, above and below, in all directions, in all time. Check in with yourself, attend to yourself. See if this has brought you more sense of ease, and if not, see how you can attend to that. Again, this is about strengthening your conviction that these are true and possible for yourself and for all beings, if only for a nanosecond so that we all can be nourished. Now we'll do Karuna phrases. Karuna often begins with another. However, we will begin with ourselves. Move to a you, that's singular or plural, and then all beings. May I connect to safety and strength whenever it's needed. Let me be able to bring mercy and tenderness to my pains and sorrows. May I be able to forgive myself for past mistakes. Let me be patient with myself and with others. And may I be free from suffering and the causes of suffering today and every day. On the next inhale, you're going to connect with how you know that one or all of these qualities of safety and protection, mercy and tenderness, forgiveness, patience, free from suffering and causes of suffering. Any or all of these, again, doesn't have to be as words, simply as a knowing. Let yourself feel it in any way that's possible. Feel nourished, feel strengthened, feel hopeful. When you exhale, let yourself rest in the knowing, the awareing, the openness to these possibilities. All right, check in with yourself. Really, in choosing the next category, make it easy because we're not pushing through. Sometimes when there's a lot of suffering in ourselves or the world, we really, really want it to end. And yet this is about connecting more to offering. So your sincerity, your confidence and trust and faith in these, your strength and confidence in these is what you're offering so that others may be able to receive it in any way that they can. So the practice is more about freely offering as opposed to knowing the results. At any point, if you visualize a single person or group and it gets to be not sincere, by that I mean not just your offering, but just more, it doesn't seem as possible for them, for you to know that is true for them. Then you switch. You visualize them or they as a tree, as a field of flowers that can receive, as a single flower. May you be able to connect to safety and protection whenever you need it. May you be able to access mercy and tenderness when you're feeling pains or sorrows. Whenever it's appropriate, may you be able to access forgiveness for yourself. When possible, may patience be your guide. And may your suffering and the causes of your suffering end in this moment or for your whole life. On your next inhale, you can connect with how you know that is true and possible, one or all of these qualities. And on the exhale, you're going to send it to your person or people, freely given, for them to receive and do with as they wish. Unconditional, no ties. Perhaps with your next inhale, see how this is feeling for you. Is there any way that you need to attend to yourself? Perhaps touching your heart space, or your gut, really sometimes like the Buddha did, touching the earth, be it with your hand or your feet. Just rest in the knowing and the offering. All right, when you're ready, visualize all beings without exception. Again, radiating, or as a gentle rain of vastness. Maybe a useful way to visualize offering widely and freely. May all beings be able to connect to safety and strength whenever we need it. Let every one of us be able to access mercy and tenderness in moments of pain or sorrow. Let us allow ourselves forgiveness for our past mistakes. When possible, let us be guided by patience for ourselves and with each other. And may all beings, near and far, be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. On your next inhale, connect with how you know that is true and possible. And on the exhale, you're going to freely offer it, perhaps in increments, perhaps as a radiation, perhaps as a open wish. Fully sincere for each and every one of us to do with as we wish. And as at least some of us offering it freely, and by that I mean all directions or to all beings, feel it coming back to you. So that's a resonance of safety and strength, mercy and tenderness, forgiveness, patience, freedom from suffering and the causes of suffering. And with yourself, there's about 3 more minutes. I'll be quiet as you feel the resonance of this practice or offer it to another being or a group of beings or yourself in any way.
feels appropriate for you right here and right now. And as we're coming to a close on this form of meditation, I myself would like to offer to dedicate the merit of this meditation to those who are suffering in the Middle East. And the next inhale, connect with how you know these qualities that we've been cultivating and accessing are true and possible. And then on the exhale, you're going to send it and feel it first. Let's do that. And then send it out in all directions and all times. All right, thank you, everyone. All right, I'm gonna actually do a quick check-in. Who would like to take a bio break of 5 minutes? Raise your hand if you want to do that. Okay, so I have what do I have? 6:43. Okay, 6:50, we'll come back. Okay.
Thank you. Then the Dharma component. Just a call to come back. Few more seconds, so actually. Right, welcome back, everyone. Thank you. I will say that I am on a book tour of my book. Home is here. And I know I did one chapter or part of a chapter with you all in August or something like that. And I actually had another chapter that was a queer story in the beginning. And given what's happening in with Israel and the Palestinians, I changed my mind. And I want to talk about self and selfing, because I think this is something that one, I think that's something that's used against us as oppressed people in the Dharma in particular, or maybe a better way, but that is that it can be misused against us in the Dharma, and especially for affinity groups such as this. I think it's really useful to remember our, I want to say history, but I want to say her story, I want to say their stories, right? And it isn't a mistake that it was hard to start this group or to allow for this group to happen. There's certainly oppression, structural oppression happening. And and around somehow, I was thinking, how come, when around affinity group, how come not that that shouldn't happen, but recovery groups have never been questioned. And that's an affinity. Right. At least in my experience with Buddha Center and Christian centers also. It's my experience. All right. And so how is self, the sense of self, which people often say, well, that's why you shouldn't have an affinity group. You're hanging on to or you're clinging to a sense of self, and that's against the teaching. So I wanted to talk a bit about that. So I'm going to begin, actually, though, by asking you to write in the chat, not as a Bloom, in any way you want. What comes up for you when I say this word? Ready? Apple. Go ahead. Only one person has a response, or two. Okay. Apple. I said the word apple. I would like you to write in your response to it.
You came direct to host. Would you like me to read those?
Yeah, sure.
Green yum, winter, crunch, confusion, crisp, seed.
All right. Okay, now I'm going to read from the book. This is the skillful motivation chapter. No, wrong chapter. That's not it. Actually, I think it is. Yes, it is. I just unclear myself. All right, here we go. Skillful Motivation, Chapter 4. Reconditioning the field of awareness to wholeness. I was on a 7-day North American Insight style retreat. There was complete silence except for 2 15-minute interviews with a teacher in the middle of the retreat. A typical day's schedule is alternating periods of seated or walking meditation of 45 minutes each, from early in the morning until late at night. This was also the kind of retreat where, except for doing the instructions and Dharma talks, you could sit and walk whenever and wherever you wanted. Essentially, as you were not interacting with anyone directly most of the 7 days, it was a great way to be with yourself completely. For an introvert, this is a heavenly experience. Whenever I'm asked in the retreat application what I want from the experience, I always say, silence and peace. On the 4th day of this particular retreat, when concentration and mindfulness had been deeply established, I went outside for walking meditation during the mid-morning. Having done many of these kinds of retreats, and quite a few at this particular center, I knew not to disperse my well-earned accumulated concentration and mindfulness by thinking too much about where to walk. So I headed to a deck area just a short distance from the main building. I was slowly walking to a spot I had been using the past few days when, just at the periphery of my right eye, I noticed a tall white man headed for the same area. I simply pivoted left to go off to another spot with no emotion or thought, because no feeling of ownership of the space came up. Thank you, concentration. That's when it happened. In my mind's eye, a light-colored wooden plaque appeared, traveling into my view from the left to the right. Carved into it in lowercase letters were the words entitled White Man. The look of the plaque was just like the one on my father's desk back in the 1970s in Thailand. With its appearance, annoyance rose. So, skillful motivation is more often translated as skillful thinking, sankappa. You have seen intention and motivation. I'm choosing motivation because it implies both what is skillful motivation itself, what drives us, and it implies on the energy that is the drive, right? Because thinking in Buddhism is never passive. And in fact, in this Eightfold Path, which is the last of the Four Noble Truths, right? There are three groupings, so some of you heard this over and over, and it's important. Is there, well, they're eight, they're broken into three parts: the wisdom, or I like to say the value part, then the ethical conduct is classically called, which I like to say compassionate connection, and then the meditative or samadhi part. Now, the wisdom part includes skillful view or skillful understanding, which in Buddhism is skillful view and understanding is of the Four Noble Truths and of karma. And then skillful thinking or motivation is part of the wisdom aspect. And then the next grouping is the ethical conduct, which is skillful speech, skillful action, and skillful livelihood, right? Now, it isn't, the more and more you study Buddhism, there's a real elegant pattern to everything. It isn't a mistake that skillful thinking is just before what I like to say is the interactive part, right? The compassionate connection or the ethical conduct. And because our thinking drives us into speech, action, and livelihood. Now, the third grouping is skillful effort, which, by the way, is a meditative quality in Buddhism. Most of us in the West, I think of effort as doing. It's really how do you use the energy of your effort, specifically to meditate classically, and then skillful mindfulness and skillful concentration. Now, Gil Fronsdal, I learned this from him, while it's the third grouping, it's actually considered the bridge, right? We go to meditate to reflect on, are we living, are our actions, our speech, our actions and our livelihood in accordance with our values, and is our values being acted out in our speech, our action, and our livelihood, right? So in meditation, it's actually not just as a calming, but it's actually a tool or methodology that offers us an opportunity to reflect and live in accordance with our values, right? Or enact our values in our lives. So thinking is never passive, right? Now thinking is conditioned. And in fact, the Buddha, when he observed thinking, saw there are two groups of thinking. The classic wording is unwholesome and wholesome. I like to say skillful or useful or unskillful, unuseful. So unwholesome or unskillful are greed, ill will, and hatred. Then the antidote, or the skillful or the wholesome, is for greed, it's renunciation. For ill will, it's metta or goodwill. And for hatred or violence, it is karuna. So compassion, so hence the meditation, right? So, and again, really elegant, isn't it? Here are thinking qualities of thinking. Notice, the Buddha never say, you should think of one or the other, or at least not in my understanding. He says this is kind of a natural thing that we have these two ways of thinking. So we practice to cultivate or to access the more skillful if we want to bring less harm to the world and less suffering in the world, right? So it isn't, we're not bad if we have unskillful or unwholesome thoughts. And in fact, how we're conditioned determines which set of, or any of those thoughts we rest on more, or we think about more, or we keep on massaging more, so to speak, right? So it's important because thinking is also looping, and it's also conditioned. So given the condition of our world, of our surrounding, of who we hang out with, what kind of speech is around us, conditions how we will also think, speak, act. So when we're conditioned, because I was thinking, oh, another way of understanding, you know, so when we think of this, I think, oh, it's just me. I better figure out which kind of thinking I should have, or how do I cultivate the more skillful one, the antidote. But if you think about it, capitalism, or their oppressive systems that play with greed, deal with hatred, deal with ill will. And so when conditions are like that, it isn't, I'm doing a double negative. It's possible that those, if you live in conditions, or if you're in conditions in which the unwholesome is the ground of your being, or is a lot of the ground of your being, your neighborhood, then it isn't, it's likely, right, because causes and conditions, that you will also reflect that. So it's the same with oppression. So that's what I'm thinking. It's not just individual, it's structural. So capitalism, greed, hatred, any of the oppressions of identity, that's one, homophobia, transphobia, racism, sexism. I had a list because I thought a few other things I didn't think of all the time. National identity. Now, Selfing, or the sense of identity in itself, is not a problem. We have to have it, right? Otherwise, I would be going, you in the white shirt with a hat on. But already I said you, by the way, right? So I already did actually, I just identify things that may lack an identity. We this is part of how we, or else we can't relate together. It's like, you over there, answer my question. You know, like, we have to have identity to interact. So it's, identity itself is not a problem. And it isn't taught as a problem in Buddhism. It's when we solidify around it, and the solidification brings harm or harming, then it becomes a problem in Buddhism. Right? When the identity, if we're just thinking about the categories in thinking, if the identity concretizes or promotes, keep on promoting greed, keep on promoting hatred, keep on promoting ill will, then that's not identities that are towards renunciation, towards goodwill, and towards compassion. Now, apple. Well, you're like, oh, how is that harming? Right? And it isn't harming. It simply is. Okay, I'm going to go back to chat if I can find it. Where's chat? Where's my chat? All right. Right. For some of you, apples are sweet. How was that conditioned to you? Was it that first apple? What if you had eaten an unripened apple first? Then maybe some of you, maybe some, there was a confusion in here. Some people find apples yummy. Some find it crunchy, right? And these are probably the things you like about apples. I should have said, ugh, what don't you like about apples? What did you hate about apples? Maybe some people are like, ugh, why do people in America always talk about apples? I prefer mangoes. I grew up Vietnam. If I had to pick a fruit first that came to my mind, it would be a mango. I actually like green mangoes. In Vietnam, you know, we go and pick a green mango, and then we dip it in, like, coarse sugar that's in, this before I was vegan, fish sauce, and then chili, so it's salty, and then the sourness of the mango, and then that spiciness, and then that, you know, so it's all, like, mommy happening in your mouth, right? So give me a mango, forget an apple, right? So these are all conditioned by where everything in our mind is conditioned. I'm really sorry. And it's also not just conditioned in this moment. Obviously, it's conditioned much longer. And so this is karma. This is how causes and condition brings us to this moment. If I had so much power, I would say, get rid of all those apples. We will only have mangoes in North America because it's a much better fruit. Can do so much more with it. Whatever. You know, I'm making shit up now. So this is how, where does the sense of an identity, be it myself, or we can start going, people who like apples better are stupid. Or they have not traveled, because if they had known mango, they would just pick a mango, so they're just stupid. In fact, I actually should tell you a story. You know, in North America, we might think, in Bay Area, for those in the Bay Area, we might think, oh, a mango. God, it's been around forever. Who wouldn't know a mango, right? But when I lived in Seattle, and let's see, I moved here in 95, so, you know, early 90s, a fancy unnamed grocery store came into my neighborhood, right? So I went, and I got a mango, and I was at the checkout. And the person who was a checkout person said, oh, because they had to look it up, you know, to put in the thing. They said, oh, this is a mango? And I was like, yeah, it's a mango, right? Disdain already. I already selfed, stupid person who doesn't know a mango, right? And then the person says to me, I've never had a mango, but I don't want to try one because I hear it tastes like a pine cone.
And then for sure, I was like, stupid person, had they never traveled, ignorant, right? I mean, I really did. Didn't taste like a pine cone. You know, my head was going, you're stupid, right? So this is where our sense of solidification becomes towards harm. It's human condition. Now, not with that mango, but that stayed with me. And one time I tasted a mango, and as I was eating it, it tastes like a pine cone. At the end, to my in my scientific examination, it was the end where it's attached, you know, and it was still a little bit green, but not green green, but just so there's a little bit that sappy pine coney. Not that I've ever eaten a pine cone, also by the way, but the smell, you know, that's that sappiness kind of pine coney, because our scent is attached to our taste. So I could go, oh, she's right. It can taste like a pine cone, right? So now I have a sense of, oh, I could say I'm stupid, you know, that I was so close-minded. We could do that. And is it useful? Is it just bringing more hatred, more judgment? And so the sense of, this is not in my notes at all, the whole thing I've been talking to you, or the start, right, you know? So this is where, let me just check in with myself here. So selfing in itself is not bad. Solidifying around it can be a necessity. And in fact, actually, the point I really want to make is then when our sense of self is threatened, most of us tend to really need or feel the need to solidify it even more because we have to defend that. And as queers, so much of defending, right? That we have a right to exist, we have been annihilated, or structures have certainly tried or at least exclude us or say, oh, no, sorry, not enough resources for you. No, can't happen. Right? So, healing from internalizing systems of oppression does ask us to examine how the sense of self comes up. And thinking is always conditioned, so our experience makes a difference. What was so awakening or enlightening, not in the bigger sense of the word, but about this experience for me, was that, you know, in Zen we say that we conceptualize our life, we don't live our life. And this was an experience in which I completely conceptualized as a plaque with the words in lowercase, right? That was associated, right? Our thinking, our thoughts are always associated from the past. My father's plaque in the 1970s, it comes from time. From the past to now. The key in practice and in healing, in my opinion, is we need to be aware that our thinking is it thinking that is one from the past, which it probably is, but we want to be aware of what is it, how are we going to use it, how are we going to use the awareness of it. Part of it is to be aware of what happens when we have a thought, right? It was a definitely, you know, it isn't, by the way, just because an associative thought does not make it wrong, because in my experience, as I wrote in here, let's see if I can find it so I can just say it, I suppose, or a field of awareness, renunciation of my notes, I'm going to read it. So karma is conditioned, is how it comes to us. And then, page 83.
Knowing we have a choice in what to do with such a coming together of causes and conditions. Our thoughts are always from causes and everything is from causes and condition, karma. For me, before that thought plaque, that's what I'm calling it, I most likely would have gone on and on with the thought to emotion loop. So our thoughts also bring on emotions, right? Entitled white man brought to me annoyance. Oh, it's important that I should say. Oh, no, I'll read it. Sorry. Most likely resulting in anger at the man, and then spending quite a bit of time trying to figure out what to do about my anger. I would therefore have dispersed my well-earned contentment and peace achieved through hours of concentration and mindfulness that I had worked for days in that retreat. Most likely, I would have tried to figure out plans, which are a series of thoughts that take me out of the present moment. I would have tried to avoid him, thus looking for him, resulting in more dispersing of concentration and mindfulness, right? That's why we're supposed to keep our eyes down to protect our concentration and the contentment and peace that's the result of concentration. Or try to find a walking space that no one would know about. Fantasy thinking that takes me away from the well-earned concentration and the present moment. And likely, my annoyance would have grown into ill will because now that man would have represented all white entitled men in the world, bringing with it ill will that could have grown into hatred. I would then have stereotyped this man, doing exactly what I don't want others to do to me. In doing so, I would have been disrupting the wholeness I was experiencing in my contentment and ease. Is there free will? By the way, this section is called Choice, Free Will, and Agency. Is there free will? Is a question that often comes up in discussion about karma. The answer is yes. Everything is conditioned, and therefore, at this moment, you have a choice about what you're going to do with what comes to you. I like to say that karma is a teaching about responsibility. What are you going to think and how are you going to live? How are you going to interact, knowing fully that how you do it will condition the next moment? We don't know all the pieces that might happen. There are many conditions, so we don't always know the end result, but we can have a sense. We can be aware, in this case, as the book is very much about Asian Americans, we can be aware as Asian American, BIPOCs, white people, or any other racial location or any location, that hatred brings more hatred, that love will bring more love, and that wholeness will bring more wholeness. Selfing is a common Buddhist term for conceiving of, sustaining, or solidifying around a sense of identity. A sense of self is going to happen. When we have a strong sense of self, what's important in practice is to investigate. Is it in service of goodwill or ill will? Does this current sense of self bring us towards compassion or toward cruelty? Being aware that our sense of self is always in context, and the implication of this supports us to be freed from unskillful conditioned selves. I guess I didn't write. This is the part that I wanted to say, I thought was in this section. I had more I was going to read, but I'm watching the time. Is that just because it's a associated thought doesn't mean it's not true? In my life as an Asian American female body, white men have more privilege in North America, and they often do take up a lot of space, and it comes from a conscious or unconscious self sense of entitlement and privilege. So just because the thought is not true in the moment doesn't mean that it doesn't have validity. Just like if we, you know, when I'm with my girlfriend and I go to Pier 39, I'm much more careful about when we hold hand or when we kiss. It's still San Francisco, which is the gayest capital of the world. This is so sad. But Pier 39 has many people from other parts of the country and the world that are much more conservative. And it's my experience. And, so it's an appropriate time to be that much more careful to me, for me, to be careful about my identity as a queer person and how I can prevent, right? Not that it's right about right and wrong, but prevent hatred from being explicit. I can't seem to get away, though, from when I try to use the bathroom and they go, "Hey, it's a women's room." Or, "Don't you know it's a women's room?" That one I haven't figured out, except to like, I should, it's often a thought. I don't know why I don't say it. Probably because my selfing as a polite person. I should say, I always want to say, maybe I'll do it next time. I always want to say, "Trust me. Would I want to come into a place where I have to stand in line before I can use the bathroom?" No. Right? That would be one answer, besides, right? Because of your narrow view about gender, right? So that was two responses I would like to say. All right, wholesome grooves. What we're doing is learning discernment about how the processes of making a self happens. When such a self arises, what beliefs does it act on? Is it towards wholeness or not? And how much of that drive to act is from white supremacy culture or other forms of oppression? And are we going to let oppression keep on motivating us towards behaviors and thoughts and beliefs that we don't want to have? I do not want to be angry all the time. I do not want to hate other people. I don't even want to be annoyed at other people, to be perfectly honest. So where is it that when I have those thoughts and feelings, I can be aware of whether they are from the past or whether they are useful now? I can be aware here and now that I have agency to determine and act on present conditions towards a future that highlights, uplifts, and engages us all in our interconnectedness and wholeness. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.